Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 84 for November 21st, 2008. La Vida Microsoft. Windows Weekly is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/Windows. And by GoToMeeting, online meetings made easy. For a free 30-day trial of GoToMeeting for your PC or Mac, visit GoToMeeting.com/Windows Weekly. Time for Windows Weekly, the time we get together every week to talk about all things Microsoft, whether it be Zoom, whether it be Xbox, whether it be Windows, whether it be Bill Gates, whether it be churros or the conquistador. It don't matter to me. We'll talk about it. Mr. Paul Thurrott is here. He is the man behind the supersite for Windows at winsupersite.com, a really great site. Also, IT, a news director for IT, Windows IT Pro Magazine, and the author of Vista Secrets. Hey, Paul.
Hey.
Giving away more books?
Yeah, I gave away some last week, and I haven't. We haven't shipped them yet, unfortunately. So we're gonna wait until we do that before we ship out anymore. It's always, or before we announce any more giveaways. But yeah, we'll have more soon.
That's great. You've given away how many now total?
Let's see, 40.
That's plus good.
Maybe five others.
That's very generous. Usually that's like the total author's allotment, so that's very generous of you.
No, I don't even usually get that much. I think we usually get about 12.
You get a case or something. Yeah, yeah. Well, thank you. So we'll let you know the next giveaway, and congratulations to those who won. Did you do? You just had people send you an email this time. You didn't do the Gears of War thing this time.
You're right. Yeah, I wasn't sure. Although, you know, I have to say, I enjoy doing this. I'm happy to do it. It is a lot of work and so forth. It's I've gotten some interesting notes from people. Somebody actually sent me a check in the mail, and a very nice note, which I thought was wonderful.
A check?
I felt bad that I was, you know, doing this. But honestly, it's nice to be able to do it. It is complicated and time consuming and all that stuff. And the only thing that's truly irritating about it, I guess, is I still get emails every day from people who want to enter the contest, even though, of course, the contest was...
It was a 15-minute window.
Saturday
you missed.
I appreciate the enthusiasm, but, you know, I wish...
Ladies and gentlemen, the contest is over. The contest is over.
Maybe that'll get attention. We'll do it again, but I can't... You know, I have to ignore the emails that don't fall in the proper time period, so... Sorry.
How big was the check?
How big was the check?
It was just
to cover shipping. You know,
oh, 15. That's nice.
No,
oh, that's
no, it wasn't. Nice. Yeah. No, it was really nice. And a really, really nice note. And
we have a bunch. I tell you, one of the reasons I love doing technology programming is the nicest people. I mean, just really great people. And I know that because I've done general interest talk for years and just crappy people, just evil.
Well, so I would just say, you know, it's funny. So I had a separate incident this week. I wasn't going to mention this, but now that you bring it up, you do get to see both ends of the spectrum.
You
right?
do, yes.
And one thing that really is really freaking me out this week is I'm on Facebook, and a lot of people have asked to be my friend on Facebook, and pretty much I've allowed anyone in, you know.
Right.
And it seems like anyone who wants to follow me on Facebook, I'm not as active, let's say, on Facebook as I am, say, on Twitter or obviously my sites and so forth. But, you know, I occasionally update the status line or something like that. So I went to the Celtics game the other night with my brother, and we were talking about Facebook. My brother just got onto Facebook. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, I haven't updated my status. Maybe I should mention that I'm here. And I had the iPhone app. So I took a picture of the stadium from my seat, and I said, hey, I'm at the Celtics game.
That's cool.
But it's cool, except that somebody on my friends list actually made a comment to my status that said, oh, Boston teams all stink and you're a bunch of whiners and losers.
What? And this is a friend of yours.
Yes. And I have to think to myself, you know, why would you, what is that?
Yeah, what is
like,
that?
Why would you do that? You know, it's out in the world, you know, if there's some guy on a Mac news website who disagrees with something I write about the Macintosh, I completely understand that, even if I don't agree with it. But you're going to be my buddy on Facebook, and then you're going to leave some little, you know, stab in the back remark on my status.
It's as if, like, see, nobody would ever do this. The guy was at the game and walked up to you and said that. Nobody would ever do that.
But that's the internet in general. No one would ever walk up to me and say
trolls.
Anything like that.
Right. And yeah. I always try to tell people, behave as if I'm there, because I am.
Well, as I've told my kids many times, you know, if you want to learn one lesson in life, you just treat people the way you want to be treated.
Yeah.
Everything else on top of that is gravy.
That's a very good point.
Yeah. I bumped this guy off my list. My new rule is no more stupidity.
Zero tolerance.
Yeah, it's just, come on, really? I mean, I just don't get that. So, yes, there's the guy on the one end of the spectrum, and most of the people do fall on the good end of the spectrum that I deal with.
I think zero stupidity tolerance is a good thing.
Man, what is that? What did you think this was funny? I don't know. So, all right, well, we'll talk next week about some Windows.
You know what? There's a big story that kind of surprises me. I mean, there's a lot of big stories. We should talk about Jerry Yang finally, you know, getting yanked, as you put it. That's yanked. And it must have been yanked, because the guy was fighting tooth and nail. He's the guy who put the kibosh on the Microsoft deal.
Right.
And the guy we pointed out 2 weeks ago at a Web 2.0 summit said, it'd be a good thing if Microsoft bought us. It'd be good for Microsoft.
Yeah, Microsoft, it would save that company, let me tell you.
And I could just imagine the board of directors going, you little twerp. We had a $33 deal. You said no. Google pulled out. We're worth 12 now. And you're saying it's good for Microsoft? You're out of here.
Steve Ballmer took his shoe off, banged it on the desk, and said, we will crush you.
We will crush you. Is there any chance? Do you think there's any chance at all that Microsoft would come back now to Yahoo with Yang gone? Because then that's the story that Yang has said, we're going to search for a CEO. I'm going to move upstairs back to my chief Yahoo role, which is basically chief nothing. I'm going to have an office and that's it.
No. I think what they've said, they've actually came out explicitly and said, we are not interested in buying Yahoo. That train has sailed. I almost said.
To make some metaphor. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know what? Here's what I think. I got a prediction. The person they're going to bring in is going to be like a chainsaw Al Dunlop. They're going to bring in a person whose sole job it'll be is to sell off all the pieces, because at this point,
what do they have? Think about it. So Microsoft said they were interested in a search deal, and that could be buying the search business outright. It could be doing some kind of deal like Google wanted to do with Yahoo. Okay, fine. But aside from search, what does Yahoo have exactly that could be considered a valuable asset?
Here's my scenario. So, they have some. No, they have things like.
I'm not asking rhetorically. I think they do have a few things.
They have quite a few things. They have Yahoo Mail is the number two mail package right after Hotmail. They have a Yahoo.
No, I would say, but yes. Okay.
If they have Flickr, which has some value, I mean, Flickr's it may not huge. Be. It may it's got traffic. It may not be monetized, but that's the problem, is that Yahoo hasn't been able to monetize any of this stuff
with the right people that could be monetized.
Precisely. So I think the board, and if I'm a shareholder, this is what I say, sell it off. Let's get some value out of this. And by the way, I think that's what Steve Ballmer's thinking, and he's thinking, I'm going to wait till the fire sale, and then I'm going to pick up whatever parts I want, which is probably search and mostly online ads, right? That's what they really want.
I could see him picking up Flickr even, to be honest. I mean,
sure.
When I look at the online landscape out there right now, I think, you know, obviously Google has search is over. They control search.
That's why I don't think search has any value. Exactly.
Yeah.
Although, now Calacanis told me this, and, you know, he started Mahalo, and I said, why are you starting Mahalo? You're not going to beat Google. He says, you don't have to beat Google. Every 1% of the Google share that you get is worth $1 billion. So 2%. Yeah. If you have 2% of the market share, if you're a small niche engine, what does Yahoo have? It's got 30 or 40%. There is some value there.
Sure.
So that's I think the reason.
There are other things online that are interesting and can make money. I think some of the stuff that Microsoft's doing around email, instant messaging, photos, and social networking. You know,
there's some
value to that stuff.
And Yahoo has some platforms there. You know, Yahoo. There's a lot of good stuff at Yahoo. There's a Yahoo user interface library.
I agree with you. The problem, though, is that Yahoo's technology is completely incompatible with Microsoft's, and it doesn't make sense for Microsoft to pick up a lot of that stuff. It might make sense for someone else to pick it up.
Right.
It might make sense for Yahoo just to continue as a smaller company too, by the way.
Right.
You know, there's no reason you can't decide to scale back, look at the stuff that we do really well, and pick your niche and just run with it.
Keep search.
Google, for all of the stuff that they do, it really is an online advertising company, but basically from the consumer standpoint, from the user standpoint, they're a search company. And
right.
I mean, they have all this other stuff going on, but they're big and they're powerful and they're successful right now. They can afford to do that. You know, I don't think Yahoo has that opportunity. They really can't afford to be all over the map.
Well, if you look at Yahoo and Google, which roughly started at the same time, Yahoo's a little older, that's where Yahoo went wrong, is they couldn't figure out a coherent strategy for all their acquisitions. They over-acquired, they overspent, and then it was just a bunch of properties with nothing tying them all together.
Well, this is typical dot-com boom stuff, right? Because these guys had no idea what they were doing.
Yeah.
They had plenty of money to spend, and they did, and they have all this stuff, and it doesn't make any sense. Yeah, give Microsoft some credit. I mean, they're late to the game in many ways. But the stuff that they're doing with Windows Live 3 that I sort of babbled through last week, at least there's a coherent strategy there. And for all the stuff that they're doing, it all kind of does work together and works with third-party services. It's actually pretty exciting. I mean, there's some pretty good stuff going on there.
Although, to play the devil's advocate here, I think Microsoft does have a little bit of the Yahoo disease, where it seems to be a lot of, in fact, many people, you included, have talked about.
They have a lot of the Yahoo disease. The difference, though, is Microsoft has money.
Right.
You can afford to do that. I mean, Yahoo, unlike Microsoft and Google, doesn't have the resources at this point.
Right.
You know, they're falling apart. This is the death spiral, right? This is the toilet flushing sound has occurred, and you have to scramble for the edge of the bowl. So I think they need to figure out what they're going to do.
They're still profitable. It might be, in a way, Microsoft hastened this demise by offering 33, kind of giving the shareholders the idea that maybe...
I know. And then they turned that down. And, of course, it looked ludicrous at the time, taken in retrospect.
Now.
My God. You know, Yahoo's stock price today is under $10.
It will go down in history. It'll be a case study. Mm-hmm. Hubris and foolishness. But when you're sitting there,
I know
who knew that the stock
It is hubris, right? Because Jerry Yang is a co-founder of the company. Right. It's hard to give up your baby. It's hard to see it go into the hands of the founder's hubris.
Yep.
Darth Vader up there in Redmond, which is the way they look at Microsoft.
Yep.
You don't want to hand your pretty little baby over to the monster. And I guess I understand that, but sometimes you got to suck it up and do the right thing. And he didn't do the right thing.
Well, he's comeuppance. I have to think this was the shareholders and the board saying, okay, Jerry.
Hey, by the way, this decision was described as mutual.
Yeah, right.
Right, which was, you're going to quit, right? Because if you don't, you're gone. Yeah, I agree to quit. Okay, so it's mutual.
It's mutual.
Let's agree. You know, it's like the kids in the hall joke. You know, can we at least agree that the sky is blue? Yes.
Yeah.
Well, now they're in agreement.
<It's>, there's only one step below that, and that is Jerry decided to quit to spend more time with his family. There's only one rung below mutual agreement, and that's it. Hey, whose idea was it to kill OneCare? I'm kind of surprised at this. Microsoft says they're getting out of the OneCare.
I don't know whose idea it was at Microsoft, but one thing I dredged up was a 5.5-year-old article I wrote where I said Microsoft needs to stop selling AV and give it away to Windows users for free.
Yes.
Because Microsoft creates this product that needs to be fixed.
Yes.
And a whole third party business grew up out of there.
Right.
And then they got into the business and they charge people for it. And that's insane. It's like, coming back with an airbag or something and trying to sell it as an aftermarket product when you make the car,
But wait a minute. Maybe the reason Microsoft did that is so that they wouldn't be stomping out Symantec and Trend.
You know what? This is an argument that I have. I don't care, and I'll tell you why. Customers come first,
right?
And that's it. And those guys, Symantec and McAfee, for all the good stuff they do, really what they are is vultures who are piggybacking on vulnerabilities in Windows that Microsoft should fix. And just integrating this stuff into Windows is the right thing to do. So what they're going to do instead is give it away for free.
They are.
You have to go and download it. It's not going to be in Windows. And I think that's the reason, that and the fact that it's what they're describing is very basic functionality.
It's not as powerful as OneCare was.
Well, it won't include a lot of the stuff that was in OneCare, right? So OneCare was an all-in-one sort of security and PC maintenance package, right? It wasn't just about security. It had antivirus, it had anti-spyware, it had, well, anti-phishing now is in the browser, but it had these other capabilities, right? One of the cool ones that it has, well, still has, right? They'll sell it until mid-next year, is a tool that you can go in and look at all the stuff that's starting up in the system. And you can uncheck the things so that they don't start up. And that's right. A really cool little bit of functionality. There was a photo backup solution, online backup solution, which I thought was absolutely silly, but it was there. So they're getting rid of all that other stuff, and they're just going with the core anti-malware protection. And so interestingly, you know, the antitrust concerns go away because, they're not bundling it in the OS.
Right.
And they're not really competing with the big security suites because they're not offering all this other stuff, right? If you look at Norton today, it does all kinds of things.
Yeah, but I have to say, I'm going to look at it, OneCare traditionally was not the best antivirus. In fact, it came out pretty low on the tests. But if it's free, I've always said all you need for spyware is Defender. If it's, on the radio, I'm going to probably say, hey, this is all you need to do. You got the Windows firewall, you got OneCare, you got, or whatever they call it, 2Care, and you, whatever, 2.0
half care,
half a care, I don't care. And you've got a hardware router. That's all you need. You don't need to buy anything else.
Almost certainly that's exactly what it's going to be. And I will look at this. It's codenamed Moro. Obviously that's not going to be the name of the product, but,
Moro.
Whatever this thing is, yeah.
Morrow?
No W.
Moro. Huh.
Yeah.
Oh, maybe like Moro Bay or something.
I don't know.
Moro. Like tomorrow. But
this is, when you're a Windows user and you're someone like me who has to install Windows all the time. I mean, I go through this litany of things every time I install Windows.
Right.
One of the things I always install is Windows Live, for example.
Right.
This will be and an AV package.
It'll
right?
be on Typically, the checklist, yeah.
This
yeah.
will be one of the things in the checklist.
It's going to put AVG out of business. I mean, it's as good as AVG, and it's the same price.
Well, AVG's always been about upselling you to the next thing anyway. So if you run AVG 8 today, the free version, there's a big advertisement in there for their internet security suite. And it does other things. It has improvements over the firewall that's in Windows, for example, and other features. So
well, and we have a sponsor on the radio show, Nod32, and I don't have any trouble saying this is, look, for $40 a year, you get a better antivirus, more thorough protection. But if you don't want to spend any money, the free products are going to go away. If you don't want to spend any money, just download this.
Right.
And that's probably all I'll do. I mean,
I don't visit a lot of the sites that cause people problems.
I do. I know what not to do.
I'm always perplexed by people who come to me and say, hey, I've got this weird virus thing.
Right.
Really?
Right.
Really? Well, how do you
do
that?
That?
I mean, seriously, did you put a sign in front of your house that said invade me or something?
Pretty much.
So, I've had very good results with the free tools, AVG in particular. So,
well, mostly because at this point it's belt and suspenders. It's too late once you get a bad guy anyway. Right now, the most important thing I say is behavior. Change your behavior. The antivirus is just your backup, in case you screw up.
Sure.
I mean, nobody, an antivirus isn't going to protect you if you do dumb things like open attachments or don't install the updates. Then an antivirus can't help you.
Right.
I don't think.
Well, seatbelt can only do so much, you know.
Exactly. If you drive into walls, sorry.
Right.
Hey, did you get the new Xbox update? Did that come down?
I did. Have you seen this thing?
Is it automatic or do you have to?
The first time as long as you log in to Xbox Live, you'll get one of those update blips.
Then probably kind of my kid's done it because he has the Xbox in the garage. So he's probably done it. I haven't seen it though.
Yeah, my son was waiting for me to get up. I think it was yesterday. And he was hopping around like a little madman. He said, come here.
There's a new blades. Is it just new blades or what is it? Is it completely different?
No, it's completely different. It's completely different.
This is the one with the little Wii guys?
Yeah, and that's the thing I don't like about it. I have to say, the interface is nice. It's funny because it looks like something completely new. But actually, if you're used to the way that the Zune works or Windows Media Center works, it has that same crossbar UI where you can go left, and up and down. And it's nice. And it does this. It's got these panels that kind of appear to fade off into the distance left to right as you look at it. And it's very attractive looking, except for these stupid me things or whatever they call avatars. God, they're awful looking. They're just terrible looking. And the thing that really, the reason this is bad is they're not optional.
Oh.
I can't get rid of this little goober guy.
Oh, that's not
so
good.
Of course it sort of behooves me to make him look like as much like me as I can. And what I'm left with is this little stick figure cartoon reject, you know, that just, and he hops around like a little moron in the corner. Stick a dunce cap on the thing. What is that? Yeah. I don't understand why they did it, because the rest of it looks beautiful. Well, actually, I should say some people will like that, right? I think the Wii proved that there's a bigger market out there than the hardcore video game.
Sure. The kids will like
it. Right?
Yeah.
Fair enough. But most of the people who own an Xbox 360 are guys like me that want to play Gears of War and Left 4 Dead and these other games. And this thing looks, this is the exact opposite of what I want this thing to look like. It's terrible. So I think for the kiddie crew, the girls, the non-hardcore gamer types, yes, okay, fine. But I think for the rest of us, they should have at least made it optional, where I could just turn that stupid little thing off. And when you navigate your friends list now, instead of a list of names,
it's like
a room of these stupid little hopping morons.
Hey, you want to play with me? Hey,
they're all waiting. Hey,
hi,
Paul.
Hey.
Oh boy.
Hi, come on, let's play.
It's really sad.
That it is not like good. That's a dumb thing. Why would they do that? Did they test it?
Here's how they tested it. Look, the Wii outsold us 3-1.
Yeah.
Time to do with the Wii, you know.
That's not why the Wii outsold the Xbox 360.
No, it's not. And by the way, the typical Microsoft maneuver, you know.
It's not the little people that didn't make.
It really, really freaks me out. It's too bad.
I make it look like you? I mean, can I make it? Could I mean?
Make it look kind of like me. I mean, I don't know. I don't know why they.
Because if I had a little pocket Paul, that might be all right.
I would enjoy having a little pocket Paul. Until I had to start smacking him around because he backtalked too much. But this thing is, it's too bad because the rest of it is nice.
Yeah.
And one thing I really like is that there's an Xbox guide. You know, you press that gray circular button that's in the middle of the controller, and it brings up this, it used to bring up a sliding panel, but now it brings it up right in the middle of the screen. And what's funny is that thing that comes up in the middle of the screen actually uses a blade UI like the old UI, which is
really
interesting. But that thing is actually very attractive as well. So that thing appears in games. It also appears when you're in the dashboard. And that looks very nice. And even the UI itself looks good. I mean, there's so much entertainment stuff in there now. Lots of links to videos and music videos and movies and TV shows and, you know, group games and parties you can have. And
they're really going social on it, huh?
Which is fine. Like I said, which is fine. But they really should have, and maybe will in the future, add some functionality where you can just turn some of that stuff off.
Yeah.
And that would just make it, I think, more palatable to people like me who just are not interested in the silliness of this. I mean, I stick with the Xbox 360 for a very specific reason and did not, you know, go to the Wii. And wow, here it is right in my face. Thanks for that. You know, I don't know. I don't.
I'm still excited. Anytime, you know, isn't it funny how we get excited about a new operating system or an update to something? It's like free. I'm going to download it. Everything's going to be fresh.
I have a problem. There's absolutely no way I'm not going to install this.
Yeah.
Right?
It's like having the house painted. So, it's just, you know.
Yeah, it is. It's shiny and new.
Right.
No, there's no doubt about that. So okay.
Could you not? I mean, could you not do it? I mean, could you turn
could
it
you
down?
Could you not do it? I suppose. I don't know. I never tried that. I know with games, if you log into a game and it says, hey, there's an update available, do you want to install it? And you choose no, you won't be able to get online and play other people online, for example. So there are good. Usually there's a very good reason to install something. You know, with a dashboard update, obviously this is a different animal entirely. So I don't know. I would imagine at some point you pretty much have to do it.
Yeah.
But as of today, I'm not positive. I saw the thing and installed it immediately.
Yeah, everybody's going to do that. We're all.
Oh my God.
Oh, shiny, pretty. shiny, pretty. It's like a free gift.
Well, that was the other thing, too. You talk about a little moment of truth there. You come downstairs, you see your son's hopping around like a little madman himself, and then you realize, I did this to him.
Yeah, why is he like that?
I don't know. Well, no, I do know. What do you mean? Why? I mean, because I'm like that. I mean,
But maybe it's a natural human thing. We're all like that.
Sure.
I don't think you made him like that. Maybe you did. Maybe it's your fault.
I was gonna take the fall, but okay.
No, I don't think so. I think that's a natural thing. Now I will go look and see because Henry is very cool, and I don't think Henry knows. You know, Henry. It's interesting. Henry is more like the norm. I think he's not a nerd. He's not a geek. But he's typical of his generation. He's completely comfortable with technology. Uses it all the time. Right. You know, first thing he does in the morning is check his MySpace. He plays all the games. but he has no enthusiasm. And I bet you, I'm going to ask him, did you notice there's an update? I bet you he won't. I think he's kind of more typical of the, you know, it's kind of part of the background for them.
They do. Well, you notice this one. I mean, it looks nothing like it used to.
But it doesn't do it automatically. You have to say, yeah, update me.
But it does slide up in front of you and say, there's a dashboard update. Did you want to install
it? I'm very curious. I'll let you know next week.
Yeah.
I'd be very curious. So he must have seen it.
Well,
my wife would resist this, right?
Yeah.
If there was some way to leave that question box open and keep working, that's what she would do.
But that's because, like my wife, she's not completely literate.
Well,
is that right?
I would say not only does she not care, she actively goes out of her way to not do stuff. You know what I mean?
Well, because probably like most people, she's afraid of what will happen, and then she knows how to use it as it is.
That could be.
Any change is risky.
Right. God forbid. Yes, right. That could be.
That's pretty common. I don't think Henry's that way. I think Henry, it's just his generation. He's 14. His generation, it's just it's part of their milieu. It's their environment. And yep. I don't think he gets all excited about updates. Now, he wants Gears of War 2.
Well, that's right. So, in other words, you know, he turns this thing on with a specific purpose in mind, yes. Right? He's going to play some game.
Yeah, and a shiny, pretty update. It's like, who, you know,
not going to make a big deal. No, yeah,
unless it bugs me so much that I have to do it, I guess I'll have to do it. But I don't. He's not afraid of it. It's just not. It's not his purpose in life. So maybe you did make your kid like that.
Wow. Well, moving on.
No. Hey,
this week, psychology today.
No, I just noticed. I think there's different kinds of kids, just like there's in adults. That's why we did on Tech TV Call for Help and Screensavers. Screensavers was for the enthusiast like you and I and your son, like you and me and your son, yes. Who would get excited about this. That was the Screensavers. And Call for Help was like for your wife and my wife. It was people who use it as a tool and who don't, they don't jump up and down because there's an update. It's like, that's not, you know, the new phone book series.
It's funny you say that because when I bought my wife a Mac Mini, probably 3 years ago now, at some point about a month after she was up and running on this thing, I asked her, how's it going with the Mac? And she said, what do you mean?
It's just a tool.
I said, well, you know, I mean, how's it working? She actually said, literally, what are you talking about? It's a tool.
Exactly.
I said, exactly. Wow. Well, yeah, of course it's a tool, but it's a tool that you interact with every day. I mean,
Aren't you happy that your son is more like you, though? I mean, I wish Henry were more, shared my enthusiasm for this stuff a little bit.
I see. Well, I'd say it's good and bad.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's mostly good.
So I'm worried about this sort of OCD nature of some of the behaviors we have about technology.
Yeah, but but everybody in his generation is going to be like that.
That's for sure.
Or most, that's anyway. Sure. So Microsoft must be looking at, you know, Black Friday is coming up in a week from today. Already retailers are saying it's going to be bleak. Circuit City Chapter 11.
Yep.
Best Buy said the worst, you know, holiday shop. The only people who are doing well are Walmart because it's cheap. So I'm sure people like companies like Microsoft are saying, what are we going to do to jumpstart holiday sales? Are they doing anything?
Yeah, not so much on the software end, but there are Xbox 360 bundles. I think we talked about the price drop. It might have been a few months
ago. But that wasn't a whole lot. And see, I'm telling my wife, we're not buying a car till January. We're not doing anything. We're going to make them. This is mean. We're going to make them suffer. We're going to want the retailers to beg us. I want to see a 50 to 70% drop and then we'll buy.
I see. You know, if you do that enough, you might be begging them to come back.
The whole economy,
you know,
gone.
I see what you're saying.
I'll be living in a cave and I'll say, God, I wish I had an Xbox.
Well, two things come to mind, right? So on the Xbox end, they have these bundles. So each of the Xbox console versions now has free games associated with it. So, you know, two games on the upper two ones and then one game plus five Xbox Live Arcade games on the arcade version. And, you know, okay, that's okay. I don't know if you saw this. This was really under the radar. There was a Zune update.
What?
Actually, there were three Zune updates.
Software update?
There was a software update, a firmware update. But they also announced new prices on most of their devices their accessories.
That's how you jumpstart it.
Yeah, and this goes back, and I hate to keep, you know, I so infrequently get to say I told you so, but as with the Microsoft AV thing, I will go back to my original Zune review, where I, you know, from 2 years ago, where I said, look, these things are fine, but if Microsoft wants to compete in this market, they have to undercut Apple all the time. Otherwise, why would anyone choose their thing if it was just sort of as good?
Just another iPod, big deal.
Yeah, right. So they've dropped the price on all of the flash devices from $10 to $30 per unit, depending on which one you're talking about. So, for example, the 16 gig version, which used to be $199, is now $179. And the biggest savings is on the 4 gig unit, which is now $99 versus $129. So, good. You know, I think that's smart.
I'm sorry.
Oh, he's gone.
No, I'm trying to. Chat room is. I can't see any of the chat room, so I just want to see some feedback from. That strikes me. I'm curious what they think. It strikes me as too little.
Too little.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess when it's $79, you can't cut too much. But it seems like you're gonna. Do you think that they'll go even farther? Is I guess the question.
No, not before the end of the holidays. I mean, I think this is it. You know, I always thought that their accessories were really expensive. For example, the the old pricing on the, you know, there's a car pack and a home AV pack. These things were $80 a piece previously. Now they're 60 or 60. I think the other
one's 69. That's, you know, that's more appropriate, I think.
Yeah.
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 Interesting. I see. I'm thinking January.
Hey, listen, we might, none of us might be left in January.
Nuclear
winter.
You
have money to spend. You better spend it now.
I'm just thinking. But don't you think that if you really wanted a deal in technology, that you would not get it before Christmas? You'd get it after. Traditionally, January is good anyway.
I was going to say that's probably been the case historically. Yes. Yeah.
And this is going to be a really, I mean, this is going to be tough.
Well, I will. This wasn't actually something I intended to discuss, but, you know, the PC makers now are offering tremendous deals because, the analysts are predicting that PC sales are going to fall dramatically this quarter over what they thought was going to happen previously. And of course, they were looking at huge gains originally. And PC prices right now are as low as they can be, I would say.
There's no margin. I mean, they're making a buck a machine or something.
Yeah. I mean, so if you're in the market for a PC,
absolutely,
this is probably the time to get it.
Or January. You don't think they'll go any lower in January.
I just can't see how they could possibly be cheaper unless they're clearing them out as part of a going out of business sale, maybe, or something. I don't know.
The analysts are saying now Dell is in deep trouble. I mean, all of these guys are.
Yeah.
And when I see HP selling a Touch Smart, which is kind of their top of the line for like $1,299.
I know. It's crazy.
It probably is a good time to buy. Although we've been saying for years, prices have been going down for years. And we finally maybe gone too far. We put the screws to the PC manufacturers. The margins are
razor thin. Well, I think the reality is, given the way that the economy has gone and how bad it's been for so long, it doesn't really matter how cheap this stuff is for some people. They're just not going to be able to afford this stuff anyway. So I guess the point is, if you were in the market for one anyway and can't afford it,
now's a good
holding
time.
Off, I don't think is going to work out.
No.
You know, this might be the right time to do it.
No. But watch for Black Friday sales. I know Apple's going to do, as usual, some big Black Friday sales. I bet you all of them are going
to
do.
You know, I've gone the past several years, most years, I've actually gone to Best Buy at 4 o'clock in the morning or whatever time.
On that Friday.
Just to sort of enjoy the freak show. And I don't actually ever mean to buy anything. I just go there to hang out.
I'd be very curious if you go this year. If
it's going to be like the Frankenstein scene with the people in torches. I think it's going to get violent.
You think? Or the other way around, there'll be nobody there.
Oh, no, they're going to be there. They're definitely going to be there. Because everyone wants to save as much money as they can.
Yeah.
I think it's going to get ugly.
Interesting. Well, we'll see. Well, next week, can you give us an update? Battered and bruised. Paul come with a black eye.
My intention is to check it out, just to see.
I'll be very, very curious. I'm going to predict it's going to be nobody will be there. It's going to be really
quiet. I went to Best Buy, I think we talked about this a week ago Friday at 10 o'clock in the morning when they opened. And there was a crowd of, I think, 30 people out there.
Yeah, you're right. Because a 40 or 50 or 60 buck game is a cheap enough thing that at least you got something.
I think a 60 buck game is expensive personally. But
yeah.
I was really shocked by how many people were out there, given, again, like the economic conditions.
Right. All right.
I guess they're home. I guess none of them have to go to work. So what the heck?
They're all out of work. Better thing to do is shoot some people while I shouldn't say that. Yeah. But I mean, shoot some people in a video game while you're out of work.
There you go.
Yeah. We're going to take a break. Coming up, IE8. We've got updates on Windows Mobile.
More Zune stuff we should talk
about. And yep. We're going to start do something new through the rest of the holidays season. Paul and I have our tech gift pick of the week, in addition to his tip of the week, his Vista tip of the week, and his Vista software pick. So a little shopping for you. Before I do that, though, I do want to mention our good friends from Citrix. They make, of course, Go to My PC. We talk about that all the time. And let's not forget GoToMeeting. What a great product GoToMeeting is. This is, you know, when you're in business and you're trying to cut corners, the first thing that you want to cut out is those expensive flights. You know, you still have to meet with your clients. You still have to meet with colleagues, but you're not going to travel. Even a drive across town now might be a little too much. That's where GoToMeeting just really comes in. Yeah, you're making the conference call, but it's still as effective as an in-person meeting because you can show them stuff. In fact, GoToMeeting now has built-in voice over internet, so you can even save money on the conference call. Works on Macs and PCs, and it is amazing. So here's what you do. You could go right now. Go to gotomeeting.com/windows. It won't cost you anything. Just use my name, Leo, when you sign up. Actually, if you go to gotomeeting.com/windowsweekly, gotomeeting.com/windowsweekly, you don't even have to use my name. gotomeeting.com/windowsweekly. But before I'm done, you'll have it installed. Then the next time you got a conference call, say, hey, I've set up a meeting. Go to gotomeeting.com. Your client will say, well, I don't want to install any software. No problem. You don't have to. Just go to gotomeeting.com. And here's the meeting ID. They enter in that six-digit number. And all of a sudden, they're seeing your computer, your desktop on their screen. So if you're showing them the PowerPoint, the websites, the documents, you can work on documents together. You could say, well, here's a first draft. What do you think of this paragraph? They say, well, let's move this around. They can do it. Training. This is an amazing technology. And because you pay one low monthly fee for as many meetings as you want, you really save money. No, you don't have to look at the clock. You don't have to count your meetings. You just as often as you want to use it. But use it free for the next month. Go to gotomeeting.com/windowsweekly. gotomeeting.com/windowsweekly. I think you're going to love it. I these guys at Citrix, there's nothing better. It is the best solution out there. I want you to try it today free. gotomeeting.com/windowsweekly. We thank them so much for their support of our program. We really appreciate that. Paul, let's save the people. We're going to save the people some money here.
Yeah, that is sort of a theme today, inadvertently.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be a theme for a while.
So in that vein, right, one of the Zune announcements that occurred this week is that people who subscribe to Zune Pass, which is their subscriber service, which costs $15 a month,
yeah,
now get a credit for 10 free tracks per month. So typically,
now, I'm already a subscriber. Does that apply to me or is it only new?
Yes, it does. No, applies to everybody. It's virtually all of the songs that they offer. They also said that by the end of the month, that 90% of the music that they offer on the service will be available in DRM-free MP3 format.
So I have a Zune Pass for $15 a month. That means I can download and listen to anything, but it expires if I don't continue to pay my $15. However, I can slowly 10 songs at a time,
yes,
start downloading the stuff I really like. See, that is a great combination. You use the pass.
That's a great combination because you find new music with the pass.
Exactly.
Then you buy the stuff you really like with the credits. Now they don't roll over, so you have to do it every month, but. You know, 10 free tracks, that's $10, basically. If you are in the mode where you're finding new music,
that's great.
That puts the price of this pass essentially at $5 a month. That's
what it should have
awesome.
Been.
That's awesome.
I think that's really right on. In fact, that's what I give my kids as an allowance is $10 a month for on iTunes. Mm-hmm. This is great. This is great. And I love it that it's going to be DRM free. I really like that.
Yeah. And I was curious about that part of it because I was thinking, you know, what if they do this in such a way that, you know, you have to have WMA music or something. You literally get a credit and you go and buy the music. So, you know, you pick the music that's MP3. And, of course, most of it will be MP3 anyway.
That's
I believe as of today, it's 2/3.
That's really good news because I still use iPod still and I might want to move my music over to my Mac or I might want to play it on my music server now. It's great. That's really great.
Fantastic.
Oh, I love that. Thank you.
Also, yeah, and if you are a Zune user or if you're just a Zune software user, there is an update. Zune 3.1 came out this week. I noticed I had to boot into Vista to record the podcast because I still can't get Skype to work properly in Windows 7 for some reason. And it's actually being offered over Windows Update now.
Oh, really?
Which sort of surprised me. Yeah. Now, the player software itself, there's nothing in there that's a big change. I think the PC software is mostly about stability and performance improvements and sync improvements with the player. But if you have a device, there are three more free games. There's some improvements to one of the built-in games. And then there's also some improvements to the Zune Social, the web version of the...
plugging my Zune in right now.
The online. There you go. Yeah, pretty nice. So anyway, unexpected. And, you know, one of the things that we have talked a lot about with regards to the Zune is that historically, these guys have put out their big release and then they disappear, you know, for months at a time. And, you know, 3.0 only came out about, I think it was a month ago. So
that's pretty fast, you know, then for an update.
Yeah. And, you know, not a huge update or anything, but for them, this is actually pretty unexpected and it's nice. And a lot of these, you know, it's a little update, but it's just some good stuff. So they're good for them.
So I'm signing in. Will it automatically? Oh, yeah. Update now. There you go.
Yeah, should. Yeah. That.
Addition, that's, I think that's great. Yeah. I've been using just a little 4 gig Zune as a, just kind of as my introduce myself to new music kind of player, but yeah. but now it may have more utility. See, that's the kind of little smart marketing things that could make a big difference for Microsoft. That's very clever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good.
IE8 update.
Yes, they have announced that they are releasing another beta. It will come out early in 2009. This doesn't surprise me, frankly, because when beta 2 shipped over the summer, they said, well, we're going to look at the feedback and see what it says, and then we'll determine if we need another update or if we're ready to go into release candidate mode. And clearly, the users have spoken. I know that I have given them some pretty serious and negative feedback because, you know, beta 2 breaks half the web, you know. I can tell it's bad.
So you don't use it day in, day out?
I can't. Yeah. I mean, I have to use it for some things, you know, especially for testing some of the Windows Live stuff and so forth. And, you know, I do use it for some stuff, but I can't use it as my primary browser. And by the way, beyond the fact that it doesn't work well with a lot of the web that I need to access on a regular basis, it also doesn't perform well. And this is something I mentioned in a blog post today, but you know, one of the standard things I'll do with any browser, I usually use Firefox, but, you know, I use Chrome for a long time there. And, of course, I go back to IE. I've used, you know, Safari as they've updated that. I always check that out. You know, you open a new browser window. I have a home page, but sometimes I like to cancel the home page and go to somewhere very specific. So, you know, you launch the browser, you hit Escape so it doesn't load the page, Alt-D typically or Control-L depending on the browser to get into the address bar, and you start typing. Now, in every other browser that I've ever used, this works absolutely fine every time. There's no problem. But there's something about IE 8 Beta 2 specifically where the thing is so slow that as you're typing, it suddenly remembers that it was trying to load the homepage, which it then does. And then it fills in the address bar with whatever it was supposed to be loading originally and overwrites what you were typing. Or the address bar loses the focus and you're typing.
That's my pet peeve. I hate it when that happens because you start typing and all of a sudden you're searching or whatever.
Or you're just tapping letters and they're going nowhere.
Firefox does that. I'll launch Firefox. It's my fault, I guess, for having. It's not that Firefox does it. It's Google does that. So I have iGoogle as my homepage. So I'll be typing. I launch Firefox. I'm typing a URL. iGoogle launches and it steals focus. And now I'm typing a search term. It drives me up the wall.
Yeah. I have my own homepage that I use, so it doesn't do that. Well, it doesn't do it in any other, you know, browser. But IE drives me crazy. And yeah. I listen. I'm here. I want to use it. I get it. I'm trying to do the Levita Microsoft thing. You know, I can't do it. It's God. It drives me crazy.
Live in Levita Microsoft.
You know? Yeah, I can't do it.
I like IE7. I think IE7's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, well, you know, compared to older versions, yeah. But
you're a Firefox guy still?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just works the way I want it to. You know, it's fast. It doesn't take up a lot of space. You know, I like it. I think the only problem that Firefox has is it still uses a lot of memory. If you leave Firefox running and you have a bunch of stuff going on, even today... You know, I can come back. I'll sometimes my system will be responding slowly, and I always wonder why. And I, you know, you can bring up Task Manager and go look, and it's always some like, you know, Firefox is using 989,000 you know kilobytes of RAM or something. It's okay, you know, okay. We'll fix that. But I don't know. Yeah, hopefully they'll get it right. So they're saying that sometime in the first quarter of 2009, they will release what typically would have been a release candidate, but they're going to release it as a beta. So if you have feedback on IE8, this is the time to give it. So the IE blog has some information about how you can provide them with feedback.
Very good. Very cool. Windows Mobile. Somebody asked me on the radio show.
Yep. Why they still make Windows Mobile?
No, he was saying, look, I want to buy a new phone. It's my first smartphone. What operating system do you recommend? And, you know, there's Palm, there's Windows Mobile, there's BlackBerry, there's iPhone, because he was an AT&T customer. And I had to say, I can't Palm and Windows Mobile. I'm trying as I might. I just can't recommend them.
Even BlackBerry, I wouldn't recommend to a consumer because all their push stuff works only for corporate, you know, exchange accounts. And that's the big point of the BlackBerry, right? So, you know, the iPhone is another example of one of those things. I'd love to go the Microsoft route if I could, but, you know, it just works the way I want it to work. It's great.
Right.
So, yeah, I wouldn't recommend that to somebody either. I mean, Windows Mobile is in such a state right now. You know, it's like Windows was 20 years ago. It's just, you know, it's just painful.
Yeah.
And hopefully they'll fix that. You know, one of the things that came out this week was Microsoft is prepping a version of IE6, you know, that 8-year-old browser, for Windows Mobile. And this is considered a big deal on Windows Mobile because, like I said, this thing is so far behind the times that you can put an 8-year-old browser on it, and it's like big news.
Right.
The problem is it's going to require a 500 megahertz processor on the phone. So they're not going to make it available as an upgrade yet again, meaning you have to get a new phone that has this thing built in. In order to get, yeah. So, you know, once again, I'm trying to be enthusiastic here, and it's like they turn the screw every time I try to get geared up for something. It just freaks me out.
It is too bad. So yeah.
It is too bad, yeah.
Do you think it's over? I mean, do you think that...
No, I don't think it's over. But, with the smartphone market, I would say before the iPhone came out, a smartphone meant a business tool, right? It was a thing that wasn't just a phone. It did a lot of PIM type stuff, right?
Right.
And, Palm qualified, even though they had kind of a cutesy OS. And obviously, the Windows Mobile devices and the BlackBerries of the world, all those things qualified. And maybe some Nokia devices that ran on their own thing. Today, smartphones have exploded into the consumer market thanks to Apple, and they're something different. A smartphone today, you're really talking about something that's a multi-purpose device, you know, something that does phone plus a bunch of other stuff, usually with internet access and onboard applications and app stores increasingly part of the deal and so forth. So I think in the consumer market, Microsoft has a lot of work to do. I think they're okay in the business market for the foreseeable future, but I just think there's going to be a lot of players. It used to be just a handful, so it was pretty easy for Microsoft to own a significant chunk of the share. But when you look at the chunk of the share compared to the overall cell phone market, you know, Windows Mobile is not going to be a big part of that.
Do you think, iPhone at least gives them a template for what can be done. Maybe they need to look at it.
They are doing that. And unfortunately, they're leaving it in some ways to the handset makers because they're moving so slowly on the OS itself. So these people are all busy writing the little front ends for Windows Mobile, and they're coming up with phones that have touchscreen. I mean, even my wife said, you know, you watch TV at night and you flit around the commercials and there's all these phones and they all look like iPhones. They all have touchscreens. And, you know, she said, what, does every phone on earth look exactly the same now or something? Yeah. What's going on, you know? And yeah, I mean, that's the type of thing. When something like the iPhone comes out, it does inspire people essentially to copy them because they want to, you know, kind of suck off the success of it, I guess. But that's not happening in the core OS anytime soon, right? I mean, Microsoft's not going to come out with an exciting new version of Windows Mobile in the next couple of months. So
I guess
they're kind of dead water.
Yeah. It's too bad.
Yeah.
It's a competitive marketplace. And the thing that must be a little galling to Microsoft is that Apple beats them to the music business with the iPod.
Sure.
Then Apple comes into their business and suddenly is the number two manufacturer of smartphones.
Well, if you think about it, the circumstances of both of those things are exactly the same. In both cases, Microsoft had something in place. They worked with partners. So if you want to look at music stores, Microsoft at first didn't have their own music store. They relied on their partners to have music stores. There were third-party movie stores. I mean, by the way, CinemaNow, I just saw a news story about them. They were sold, I think, to Sonic today.
Oh, really? Oh.
CinemaNow went into business renting and, well, I think just selling digital movies in 1999.
I know, way ahead of
that's
the market.
How long they've been around,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I remember going on business trips years and years ago and renting movies from MovieLink and some right. CinemaNow on right. my computer
right.
so that I could watch them on my laptop when I was on the trip.
Right.
Years before Apple ever came out with anything like iTunes or the iTunes Store and so forth. Same thing with Windows Mobile. You know, Windows Mobile came out of the Windows CE work that all started back in the mid-1990s. They've been in the market for years, and Apple came out of nowhere. But this is, you know, this is a classic case study if you think about it, right? I mean, Microsoft was pretty successful. Well, pretty successful in the phone end. They were, I suppose, reasonably successful in the digital media end. But it took someone like Apple, well, Apple specifically in this case, to come out with something really exciting to just get consumers excited about the market. You know,
of course, this is the way the industry is because Apple had a menuing windowed GUI in 1984 and kind of sat back on its laurels, and Microsoft, you know, took them 6 years, but by 1990, boom, it's all over.
I suspect the comeuppance nature of what you just said is not lost on people like Steve Jobs.
I think it could go the other way another time, right? I mean, this is just the business. It's just the normal way it is.
First to market very rarely means success.
Well, look at CinemaNow. I mean, they were there too early. And I still have in my head, rightly or wrongly, the impression that, oh, it looks crappy. Because in 1999,
I did have this thought as I was reading the story. CinemaNow was sold, I want to say, for $3 million. And I know that MovieLink was sold to Blockbuster sometime in the past year for $10 million. So these things are worth in the single-digit million-dollar range. That's how much they're worth.
Right.
If you look at Apple's movie and TV store and the sales that they make, and I mean, I wonder how much money they make
They don't.
Yeah, so I don't know. But obviously, the reason that it's successful, though, is because what these things really do is support the products that are successful, right. The iPhones, the iPods. And to a lesser extent, things like Apple TV.
Right.
So they're really there as part of an ecosystem. When you just do that one thing, you know, if you're Napster with the music store, or you're CinemaNow with the movie store, or you're Rio, you know, when they used to make devices or whoever, you're only getting that little sliver of the market, right? And those companies just tend not to be very successful.
Well, I think Apple said many times, we don't make much, if any, money on what we do. Yeah. It's really to sell iPods. They don't have to. It's an iPod thing.
It's almost like they have to have the business there.
Right.
So if they don't, someone else will do it. And they don't want that because their deal is they want to have control over the whole ecosystem, you know.
Right.
And that obviously has worked out really well for them. So
we're going to get our tech gift. You and I will do a tech gift every show from now through the holidays in just a bit. Also, Paul's got a tip. A Vista tip and a software pick. But first, I didn't ask you if you have an Audible pick. Do you have an Audible pick for us?
I do have an Audible pick.
Let's talk about Audible a little bit. Audible.com/windows. That's the place to go to get your special deal. You get a credit toward a book free, absolutely free, when you sign up at audible.com/windows. Now, here's the deal. If you decide not to stick around, the book's yours to keep. But I have a feeling when you look at the 51, and they know this, when you look at the 51,000 titles and the variety and the great stuff that's there, you're going to be an Audible member for life. I know I am. I joined Audible. It's kind of like CinemaNow, right? I joined Audible when it first started, like 2001, for the same reason that you did, Paul, which was to, you know, have something to listen to on my trips and so forth, and mostly my commute. And I'm just hundreds and hundreds of books later. It's how I prefer to read books. I've just become so used to it. I just love it. It's just the greatest way to listen to a book. You like thrillers. You're kind of the thriller guy.
Mm-hmm.
What do you got? What do you have today? Is it a thriller?
No, actually this week I have to admit I didn't get this one on Audible, but it is on Audible and it's unabridged. The reason I didn't get it on Audible is they offered it through the Kindle early. And if you ordered it early, you got one of the stories ahead of time. So it's a collection of short stories by Stephen King called Just After Sunset.
Oh, just came out. Yeah. Is it good?
Yeah, it just came out. Yeah. I just finished it the other day, actually. It's fantastic. It's all over the map as far as, you know, some of it's straight horror. Some of it's just gross out. Some of it is really just reflections. You can tell, you know, it's funny now as I get older, I sort of understand where the ideas for these things come from, because you can sort of see the themes and so forth. Something I wouldn't have noticed when I was younger. But
I love him, though. Once you start to get to know who he is, you do. You have this kind of appreciation of his stuff. So I love the reminiscence. The memoir stuff to me is very interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a lot of post 9/11 type stuff in here. There's a lot of, you know, like I said, the final stories are real, as he describes, even grossed him out, and it is that kind of thing. But I looked at the Audible version, and there's a lot of different people doing it. So I don't know if it's a different reader on each story or how they're doing
it. I think it is. Yeah, they have some big names. Stephen King does read some of it. It looks really, really good.
Yeah, it's a great collection. So definitely can recommend it, having just finished it. So definitely one to check out, especially if you're a fan.
The name again?
Just After Sunset.
Just After Sunset, the newest collection of Stephen King short stories. It is on Audible. It's interesting. They released it at the same time as the book came out. Audible didn't used to have much Stephen King stuff, and it always bugged me a little bit. And clearly this is what Audible does. They go to the publisher and they negotiate the audiobook rights. And they've become much more aggressive about really getting publishers who don't either do only abridged versions or don't do recordings. And they've been great at adding to their collection. And now almost every Stephen King book is there in both abridged and unabridged. And I'm really happy about that. This is the newest from Stephen King. This could be your free book. Just go to audible.com/windows on your commute, in the garden, on your way to work, cooking dinner. This is what I've started listening while I'm cooking or cleaning in the house. audible.com/windows. We thank them so much for their support of Windows Weekly. So, tech gifts. I like this idea. You came up with this idea. I think this is great. I mean, here we are.
Yeah, especially, and I want, you know, in other words, I don't want to recommend something like a $900 server or, that kind of thing. I mean, it should be a relatively thrifty, you know, given the fact that we're talking about tech products and so forth, you know, things that I think are useful and fun and, you know, whatever.
There's just a ton of stuff out there now. Yeah, and that's the thing is it's a little overwhelming. Yeah, I'll start because I have fallen in love. I'm going to do this on the GizWiz next week. With something I've known about for years, internet radio.
Okay.
And it just kind of took me off guard. We started to do an internet radio stream, you know, and I set up a server. And as a result, I had to learn about not only serving it, but how to get on the directories and stuff, because there's a number of directories. And I found this site called Receiva, RECIVA.com. And on Receiva, they have a directory. It's kind of the directory for manufacturers. It's like you know, TiVo has the television show directory. It's kind of like that.
Right.
Get this, Paul. Almost 15,000 stations are on Receiva. But this is what blew me away. 22,000 on-demand stations. So, for instance, the BBC, NPR, many of these stations, you can go to their on-demand channel and say, oh, I missed All Things Considered. I'd like to listen to it. You don't even. This is amazing. This is mind-blowing. So I want to recommend there are a number of internet radios. You go out and buy them. They range in price from $80. You could get a Chumby to more than $200, depending on, you know, the features and so forth. I just bought a Grace that I'm very happy with. I think it was $170. Now, here's what it does. It's so cool. First of all, it'll support all the stations on the Receiva. So you get 15,000 regular stations, 22,000 on-demand stations. You can go on to Receiva.com and say, these are my favorites, and you pick them. And so now it'll show up on the radio. It supports Pandora. Now, for Pandora, you have to buy the $36 a year. That's only $3 a month. Pandora Pro subscription, whatever it is. But now any station I create on Pandora shows up on my Grace. It's like, when I was a young man, I used to listen to shortwave radio. I loved hearing All Around the World. This is so much better because all of them come in really clearly. I'm listening to the BBC. I'm listening to classical music from around the world. That's beautiful. Some of it has commercials. You know, the Live 365 stuff has commercials. But a lot of it is from national broadcasting companies like the ABC, the Australian Broadcasting Company, and is commercial free. The variety, I found a bunch of, on Receive, I searched for Christmas, and I found Christmas jazz, Christmas country, all sorts of great Christmas channels. I'm listening to the holiday music. If you haven't discovered internet radio, of course you can do this on your computer, but having one, I just put the little receiver in the kitchen. You can have presets. It has five alarms on it. So I have one in my, I bought another one for my bedroom. That's from the Sea Crane Wi-Fi radio, which I really like. That's small in my bedroom. Both of them have jacks that you can put headphones in or hook up a stereo system with. So I've put nice speakers on both of them. I hate to say it, but I don't know why anybody would subscribe to satellite radio with this stuff.
I was just going through this with the gym I go to, was looking for an alternative to satellite radio. I was just thinking about this
incredible.
As an alternative.
Now, all of these are Wi-Fi. The Sea Crane has an Ethernet port in the back, so you could go wired, but they all support Wi-Fi. They all support WPA as well as WEP. So they work. And, you know, when you're listening to an internet radio station, it's really sipping at your bandwidth. That even a very high-quality one is only 128 kilobits, and most of them are 64 kilobits. Some of them are in great stereo. I mean, I'm listening to classical stations in stereo. The quality is better than – it's incredible. Mm-hmm. It's just blowing my mind. I am so happy. So you might want to – as a great gift – I know it's a little pricey given that you're spending $150 to $200 on it. But if you think about the fact that you don't have to pay for the monthly –
But then you're done, right?
There's no fee. Unless you do the Pandora, that's $3 a month. I have some good Pandora stations. So that's kind of nice, but really you don't need the Pandora. Not all of them support Pandora. You have to check what Sea Crane does not. The Grace does. I really like the Grace. I think that's a nice. And by the way, both of these have very good little speakers built in that are fine. They're great for. I use my as an alarm clock. I set the alarm and it wakes me up to this beautiful music or the BBC or NPR. So my recommendation: take a look at Wi-Fi radios and in particular the Grace. Or the Sea Crane, both of those are on Amazon. I bought mine on Amazon.com, and really, really liking what they're doing. So that's my not thrifty, but I think if you have somebody you really like, or maybe for yourself, my tech gift for the holidays this week. How about you, Paul?
So I have one primary one, and then two alternatives, depending on your needs. But this is about set-top boxes for the living room. You know, the holy grail of you have a computer in your office and you want to get the content out into your HDTV and your stereo system and all that stuff. And one thing, I think we've talked about this a couple times over this year, is I think I've tried out virtually every single set-top box on Earth this year. You know, the Popcorn Hour, all the...
Right.
The Media Center extenders,
Roku,
the Apple TV, all that stuff. And, you know, some of these devices, depending on what, you know, if you're a Netflix subscriber, for example, actually, there's a $99 Roku device that's worthwhile. But for the other stuff, you know, you have content on your computer that is, you know, digital movies, digital photos, digital music. You know, you want to get that stuff out into your living room. You know, how do you do it? You could get a computer out there, a media center, a computer, and all kinds of different ways to do it. But actually, what I've discovered is a wonderful device. It's called the WDTV HD Media Player, right? Western Digital makes it. Oh. It looks like one of their little portable hard drives. It's a little black box.
Wow.
It's incredibly small. In fact, it's a little smaller than that Roku device for Netflix. It's $129. It comes with a little remote and two USB ports and an HD output, including HDMI component and composite as well. And what's beautiful about this thing is it works with virtually all of the common media types, including iPod formatted H.264 video files, which is the type I use, which is the problem I've had with a lot of the devices I've tested. Some just don't work properly, especially over the network. But all you need to do is plug in any kind of USB storage to this thing that has it will scan the device, find all the content, throw it up on the menu, and let you play it. And one of the things I've done over the years is I've recorded a bunch of my kids' movies, you know, the DVD movies, and TV shows, like they love The Simpsons, for example. They have several seasons worth of that stuff. And these are the movies and that we bring with us when we go on trips. And they can watch them on laptops and so forth. But I always thought, you know, it'd be really nice if I could have something in the den where they could watch this content. It would be easy, you know, it would be something they could use for starters. It would be something that worked all the time. And it would be something that wouldn't be hugely expensive. And this thing really fits the bill. It's beautiful. And surprisingly, given the size of this little thing, the quality of the output is fantastic. It works really, really well. So I can recommend it. I'll write a review of it sometime before the end of the year up on the site. But I just wanted to throw this out early because it's brand new. It just came out a couple of weeks ago, and it is a fantastic little device.
Cool. We'll put a link in the show notes. Western.
Yeah. Now, alternatively, though, I wanted to say if you have an iPod or a Zune, you can actually do something very similar for even less money. You know, you can obviously go the expensive route and get like an Apple TV, which starts at $229, or a Media Center extender, which I think starts at about $300, if I remember correctly. But iPod users can buy a dock and an AV cable for about $100. And that's essentially an Apple TV right there. I mean, the only difference is you can't sit back on the couch and navigate the UI up on the screen, which is unfortunate. If you have a Zune, you're in even better shape because you can buy a home AV pack for $60. And this includes the dock cables, not HD cables, but regular cables, and a remote control. And you can, in fact, navigate the UI from the couch with the remote, which is beautiful. And optionally, you can buy component HD cables, and you can get the output to look even better. And both of these things are just really inexpensive. And a lot of people already have these devices. And rather than buy yet another thing, right, where you can put your media on something else,
you got
why not just use the thing you already have? Yeah, the media is sitting there on a device. Just plug it in and go. And both of those things work really well. I've done both of those.
I think that's a great suggestion. And people forget about that. You know, you forget you can do that.
Well, especially on the Apple side, you tend to think, you know, Apple TV, Apple TV, Apple TV. But you know, the truth is, you already have the iPod. Yeah, I mean, you could just leave the dock out there and you're done connected to your TV.
Right. I forgot to mention that many of these internet radios also do that media extender thing. So they'll play, usually using Windows Media Player, they'll play anything on your computer as well. Audio on your computer. So it's kind of like an all-in-one. You know, there's a Logitech now has this new SoundBridge. It's a boombox. And that's really great too. It's got good speakers. I'm telling you, I feel like people have been talking about internet radio for years and I just figured it out. It's like, whoa, this is great.
Well, I think it only very recently became the way it is, you know, where you can, it's sort of ubiquitous and it works. And now there are all these cool little, like the Chubby devices, which are just kind of hilarious.
Chubby is hysterical. Like, I just got a Chubby. It's the funniest, funniest little thing. Yeah.
It's like a Tribble, you know?
It is. It's like, it's a beanbag with a screen in it.
That's funny. It's just, you know, it's neat.
You know, it's completely useless. And given the price, like, it's hard for me to recommend the Chubby because it's like $150, but it sure is fun. I'm glad.
Yeah, they are.
I got one for the studio because I figured, well, I can't justify it in my house, but it's a set decoration. Yeah, that's it. It's a business expense. It's what it's what I was thinking.
Sure.
All right. Let's get your pick of the week for your Vista tip.
Okay. So I have two tips. One is Microsoft related, and for the people that doesn't apply to, I've got something else. Okay. So Christopher Tumadello wrote in about a program called Microsoft Dream Spark. It's at dreamspark.com. Basically, if you're a student, you can get a bunch of Microsoft products for free. They're mostly developer-oriented products, so it's things like Visual Studio, but it also includes things like Windows Server. And there's another free service you can get through there called the Microsoft IT Academy Student Pass, which is a set of free e-learning courses that are designed to get you going on your Microsoft certification. So if you are in school and can prove it, I think it's probably it might be US only, or maybe it's US Canada. I'd have to look at it, but it's open to students, and this stuff is absolutely free, and it's definitely something to check out.
I got to tell Abby about that. That's great. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. Let me see what it says. Let's see. Giving student. Yeah. I don't know. It doesn't say, let me see. Well, it has various languages, so I don't know. Maybe it is not only US and Canada. You should check into it either way. Now, this one's a sort of a general tip. I think this is really cool. You know, Google has partnered with Life to put the Life magazine photo archive online. Have you seen this?
No. God, when I was growing up, that was to me, when Life magazine came, I couldn't wait to just dive into it. I love the pictures in Life.
This is awesome. So you go to images.google.com/hosted/life. And it's basically the entire Life photo archive. They say it stretches from the 1750s. Is that possible?
No.
To today. I don't know what that means, but I pasted that.
Are you saying
in.
Ben Franklin subscribed to Life magazine?
Obviously they weren't photos, so I don't know what that means.
They must have some archives of some kind. That's interesting.
That's what it says on the site, but they do have photos from the 1860s. So maybe they have the 1850s.
So if you click you're 10 years younger than me. Did you get Life magazine when you were a kid, or was it gone by then?
Here's how I experienced Life magazine. When I was a kid, I used to go to the local library. You know, there was a branch library near my house, and I used to live in the magazine section because they just had this cool stuff I'd never, I just loved. And cool. Life magazine was one. There was a model railroader magazine that I just thought was the coolest thing in the world. And there was like a, it wasn't Popular Science, but it was a science magazine for kids. And I can't think of the name of it, but I used to live on this stuff. And of course, you know, Life magazine obviously is incredible. And I don't remember when they went to a smaller format. And then I don't, are they even alert? I don't even
know. No, they're long gone. There's still Time Life books and stuff, but you know, so for people who are younger and don't remember, it was a big format magazine. It was like tabloid size. Every week it came out and it was really focused on photos. I mean, they would have articles, in fact, some very famous articles, but it was really focused on photos. So it was like getting a magazine beautifully printed of the best photography of the week, you know, mostly photojournalism. And I just loved
it. It's awesome. So this stuff is awesome. There are links that you set up for different eras. You can just click on the 1890s or whatever and see the pictures of the era. But they also have, you know, people, places, events, sports, culture, et cetera. You can search for anything you want. If you know something was in Life magazine, you want to find it, or if you're just looking to see if it was Life.
You know, when I read Mad magazines, old Mad magazines, it reminds, because, you know, I can tell exactly what era, you know, how old I was. I remember reading that. I'm sure I'll have that same experience. I'll look, oh, I remember seeing that picture. You know, it brings back those memories. It's amazing. Wow, I can't wait. You know,
classic.
Along those lines, somebody sent me a link to Library of Congress has put a lot of photography online.
Oh, really?
Oh, man, including... and I'll see if I can find the link for our show notes. A Russian photographer who was taking pictures in the 1870s, 1880s, and he was using a process where he would take three pictures. It's almost all still lifes, red, green, and blue, and then merge them. So that's it's color photography, beautiful color photography from 150 years ago. It's incredible.
Right.
Mostly of Russian life, peasant life. It's very, very interesting. So, yeah, I think more and more we're seeing this online. You know, Bill Gates bought the Corbis collection and is trying to bit by bit is
well, that stuff's fine. You know, the problem with Corbis obviously is they're a commercial venture, right?
He bought the Bettman archives.
Yeah, and that's fine, but I mean,
you can't see it. No, I agree. And they're slowly digitizing it. Apparently, what was happening, a lot of these were printed and were fading away, or the negatives were falling apart. So they put them in a cave. Where they control humidity and temperature, and they're slowly digitizing them. But I think you're right. I think mostly what they're going to do with them is what they do with most of the Corbis stuff is license it.
Right.
Be nice if they released it, because this is our history. You know, this is amazing stuff. Really amazing. Oh, I'm so glad the life's online. I'll do it right after the show. I'm going there. Very cool. And before we wrap up, I think you don't owe us a thing, because this has been a jam.
Well, actually, I just wanted to say also software of the week is Zune 3.1. If you haven't checked out Zune, even if you don't have a device, just check it out. It's great stuff.
I already got it. And now I'm putting all the Christmas music on my Zune, the seasonal music. It's a little early, I know, but I look forward to that time. Well, a lot of fun. I wish you luck at your Best Buy on Black Friday. We'll talk.
What are we going to do next week?
Thanksgiving is next Thursday. So let's. And I'm not going to be here on Friday. So maybe what we'll do is record the show on Wednesday if you can.
Okay, let me.
I'll send you a note, and then so I guess we won't find out what happened at Best Buy, but we'll do it. We'll find out in 2 weeks what happened at Best Buy.
We'll find out eventually. Yeah.
And have a happy Turkey Day.
Maybe you find out that I slept in. Who knows?
You should. Do you do? What are you doing for Thanksgiving? Do you do a big deal or?
Yeah, we do a big family thing. And actually this year, I want to say for the first time, we're going to do it here.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So you are in charge of the turkey.
I am the turkey. Wait.
So how are you going to cook it? Where do you come down? Are you the flash fried, deep fried one? Are you the fast roast? Are you the barbecue? Where do you come down on the turkey question?
You know, I love that there's a debate about this, because the truth is there's only one way to cook a turkey.
Oh, what is that?
You have to cook it upside down.
Oh, you're right. That I agree with you. Do you brine?
Because, yes.
Yes. He's a briner.
Otherwise, the breast meat gets dry.
Right. The problem with a turkey.
Right.
Is it's the too breast
big.
Meat? It's too big.
To cook the inside, you have to destroy the outside.
The breast meat cooks too fast. The dark meat cooks too slow. And never the twain shall meet. So yeah, upside down. Although I've been doing a rotating thing.
Oh, that's probably a good idea as well, actually.
Yeah. There's a plus and minus. The minus is you let heat out of the oven, so it slows it down. But then, you know, best recipes, which I love, Now we're really talking about going far afield.
I know. It's okay.
But best recipes. Do you know about them? They're in your neck of the woods. It's a test kitchen where they will say, okay, well, what's the best way to cook a turkey? And they'll cook it every way possible, have taste testers, and they'll say, this is the right way to do it. So they have a whole cookbook. It's a pretty complicated method. It involves brining the night before. Brining is key to keeping it moist. And then they speak of this issue. There's some trussing involved and there's some rotation involved. There's some temperature changing involved. But they say it's the only way to solve this issue of the dark meat, getting the dark meat cooked without drying out the breast.
That's awesome.
So you sound like you've been paying attention, though. You know what you're doing.
I'm actually nervous that I know anything about this, but yes.
There is a funny, we showed it on Munchcast. There's a very funny video from like the Consumer Product Safety Commission of why not to deep fat fry a turkey.
the deep fryer thing, I'm sorry, that's ridiculous.
There are people who are gonna go, hey, you're crazy.
I don't say that from the outside looking in. I have done it.
Oh, you have? Okay.
It is ridiculous. And dangerous.
And dangerous. That bursts into flames if you put too much oil and it boils over, you.
If you ever watch, like, Alton Brown has a cooking show on TV.
Yeah, I love him.
He creates what I believe is a three-ladder system where you, like, suspend the thing. It's the stupidest. It's unbelievable.
Well, I hope everybody has a wonderful Thanksgiving, and we will probably talk the day before Thanksgiving, but we'll air the show the day after. Paul Theriot is the, of course, the genial host at the Supersite for Windows, winsupersite.com. A great place to go. All of this material and lots more there. He's the news editor for Windows IT Pro, and his book, Windows Vista Secrets, is in bookstores now. All have a great turkey day. We'll talk again next week. Sure.